Please do be seated. The presentation of the Lord. Previously, when I preached on this Sunday, or when it's fallen midweek and we've observed it then, I've been very proud of my opening image, my kind of headline at the beginning. And it goes something like this. Now imagine that you're in a Sunday service and we're doing what we do, the Sunday stuff. So we have hymns and liturgy and there's all the usual sitting as we are, expectant and being a part of worship. And all of a sudden someone stands up in the middle and grabs a child and holds them up and says amazing things, that this child is destined for incredible things and is going to change the world. And then I would go on and I'd say, imagine that happening here. Because that's just how it was for Mary and Joseph. Except it wasn't. I was wrong. That wonderful let's concentrate the mind opener was me doing a really good job of imposing a Western Anglicanized version of what might have happened onto that text. It's very far removed from that situation which Mary and Joseph might have found themselves in. And that's without even beginning the discussion as to whether the story we heard today is an account of an actual historical event or a mythic construct or a mix of both, which is a discussion for another time. I'm not going to go there. It took a Muslim scholar, Reza Aslan, in the excellent and thought-provoking book Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth, to paint a vivid picture of what the temple would actually have been like in the first century. It was a place of constant activity, filled with people milling about, going about to different altars that existed around this as big as a football stadium place of worship. It was a place of noise and of smell, with the sounds of animals who were to be sacrificed, the chants and incantations of priests, the smoke and the smell of blood from sacrifice, the movement, the sound of people talking, of debating, of discussing, the traders in the courts outside, the arguments. It was not a place of worship as we, with our genteel proscenium arch based rows of serried pews singing out of hymns, led by the gentle ministrations of a priest, are used to. It was more like the bustle of a railway station, or a mall, or the ledge as everyone's trying to get to the dining hall. Which means that the profound and prophetic words of Simeon and of Anna, as we heard today, would probably have gone largely unheeded. The scene that unfolds in our gospel reading for today would have been largely invisible. And that perhaps makes it more profound and striking. That this story is included in Luke's gospel means the author has something they want to say, and something they very much want us to take notice of. And I can't even begin to do justice to all the layers within today's gospel reading. I can only give you a glimpse of what's speaking to me in the gospel and in our other scriptures for today. I encourage you, as I'm sure we do every week, to go away and read these passages for yourself and reflect on them and see all the different layers, like peeling an onion, that you can get from every piece of scripture. But the job of the preacher, I think, is to point towards something and say, God is here, and encourage you to find the way that these words speak to you. I do not claim to be the voice of God, but to encourage each one of us to discern the divine voice in what we hear and do week by week. But I digress. Patrick spoke on this passage just a few weeks ago on the Sunday after Christmas and brought out a powerful message of Simeon being reconciled to being at the end of his life. He spoke about good dying and our own mortality, and that's something I believe we need to address as a community. But I don't want to try and re-preach Patrick's excellent sermon. I don't know if it's up on the website yet, but if not, I hope it will be soon, and I encourage you all to listen to those reflections and think on what was shared and what we as a community can do to come to terms, to wrestle with the meaning behind good dying and those movements towards the end of our lives. But I'm not going to talk about that. I want to look at this a different way, just as I have been confronted by this text in a new way. I've already hinted at what has struck me in today's gospel reading, and that's the way in which we bring, or more accurately impose, our own way of seeing when we come to Scripture. For years, I came at this passage from a white, middle-class Anglican view. I thought in terms of the disruption that such an interjection as Simeon's would bring to one of our lovely ordered acts of worship, and how shocking and surprising it would be to all of us. Just like the story, or rather urban myth, which was doing the rounds when I was a youth minister, of a person who'd never been to church before, who stood up in the middle of sermon and said with wonder in his voice, "Oi, you lot should listen to this, this is bloody amazing." To which the nonplussed preacher said, "Well, yes, I suppose it is." But to impose my way of thinking, my way of being and worshipping, to impose my cultural conditioning on this story is to force an interpretation into these words and to forget that God's story is not my story. God invites me to share God's story. God's story interrupts and challenges and disrupts my story, even as God's story invites me to share in a new way of being, one not confined by the strictures of my culture and worldview. And we can see within today's text challenges to the prevailing worldview of today and of the first century culture. Both Simeon and Anna carry on a line of prophets which we see in our Hebrew scriptures, speaking out truth and challenging the comfortable. Simeon talks of Jesus being destined for the rising and falling of many, and this being a point of great pain for Mary herself. Anna likewise talks of the child, as Jesus is referred to in the text, to all those who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem, or, because it's a code, for the overthrow of empire. And that's where I have to acknowledge my own interpretive lens at the moment, my current place of challenge. I acknowledge here that my own thoughts, these thoughts in this sermon, are shaped by the reading I'm doing and by the encounters I'm having, but at least now I realize I'm doing it. Using that interpretive lens, I've been profoundly challenged by a book that I am preparing a Lent study on, and this is my visual aid because I carefully brought it in from the car and left it in my office. So imagine a bright orange book with the words "Radical Reconciliation" across the front. I'm caught up in lots of places, it seems, and sometimes these events all seem to happen at the same time, or just I'm more aware of them. I'm caught up with conversations about reconciliation and decolonization, about looking at where our society is and where we should be going. Themes, I think, that are a challenge to us as the people of these lands and a challenge to us as the church. I believe we need to pay attention to the call to decolonization. And this book, Radical Reconciliation by Alan Bursek and Curtis DeYoung, encourages us to read Scripture through a particular lens, through the lens of Jesus and the figures in our gospel stories and all of our writers in Scripture as colonized citizens of empire, bringing a new and radically different order to that presented by the dominant culture of the day. And so in such a view, we see the role of Simeon and Anna as speaking out truth against the dominant social constructs. Simeon talks of the falling and rising of many. He's speaking out against the religious and social structures that keep people down, the downtrodden. And he talks to others at the top of the pile being thrown down, echoing Mary's words in that wonderful song of the Magnificat. This is God's radical agenda, and it will not be comfortable. A change that will be painful not only for Mary, but for all those who benefit from unjust structures which can only exist on the backs or over the heads of those who are below them. The redemption of Jerusalem, proclaimed by Anna, becomes a radical change from the dominance of empire into a new order, an order of justice, love, grace, shalom, as proclaimed by the prophets. And this message contains a challenge to us as colonized subjects of empire, for both those who are oppressed and those who are beneficiaries of empire are colonized. Our worldview, our complicity in current structures is questioned as we are asked if we are as at peace as Simeon is in our story. Could we say, "Your word has been fulfilled"? For have we seen the fulfillment of the word of justice, the word of freedom, the word of love, the word of faith, the word of a new world? And if we have not seen the fulfillment of that word, what can we, with God's help, do about it? Thanks be to God.